Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm happy to have Brian Giovanni with me. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm going well. That's not even the right way to answer. It's going well.
It's going well.
I'm good. It's good. Everything is good. Brian and I just had a great conversation. If you want to listen to it, it's the podcast before this one. Learned all about Brian, how he grew up, how he got interested in theater and film, and went to chose the right college. I like the story about it.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't bother saying, like, I chose my university based on following a girl that I like.
Oh, yeah?
And I think your decision making was a better process. Although she's a lovely person, still like
her. Oh, good. Yeah. Glad to hear that, at least.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a relief.
If you're going to follow someone, at least that person should be lovely, right?
Oh, she didn't go there, by the way.
Oh, really?
She went to a different college.
Oh,
and she urged me to go to this better college, and I'm like, no, I'm going to go to this one with you.
Oh.
And then she didn't even go, and it wasn't her fault. She tried to guide me properly.
Huh.
I just shared a big, silly overshare. What's that called? Too much information? Anyway,
yes.
Cut to the chase. Brian is here. We're about to do the four questions, which means he's going to answer favorite films of all time, overrated film, underrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. I actually switched overrated and underrated there. But before we jump into Brian's answers to those four questions, I am going to mention that his film of Crumbs and Dreams, which you should absolutely see, it was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021, and it is in the Discover Indie Film TV series. Yes, this podcast gave birth to a TV series that's on Amazon Prime Video. Just go to Prime Video. I normally say go to Prime Video anywhere, but please watch it on a big TV. You should not watch films on a phone. It breaks my heart when I watch our 14-year-old watching Netflix on her phone in a room with a 65-inch TV. She's sitting on the couch looking at her phone. At least use AirPlay or something and throw it
right,
to the TV.
Right.
But so watch Discover Indie Film. Go to Season 6, Episode 3, and enjoy Of Crumbs and Dreams. It opens that episode and is followed by two other wonderful shorts. Discover Indie Film is just short films handpicked from the festival circuit. Please enjoy it. Enjoy Brian's work in it in Season 6, which is coming out right around now-ish. I think probably it's already out.
Perfect. Good timing.
I didn't study the calendar close enough to know, but needless to say, you will love it. It's about the story of a courageous ant.
An ant in a lineup of carrying crumbs with his fellow worker ants, and he dares to be bold and dream and break from his peers.
He does.
He has dreams of his own.
He does, and that's Of Crumbs and Dreams is the one film we're talking about. All right, so go watch that. And at the end of this podcast, I'll have Brian tell you his website and Instagram so you can see all his cool artwork and more. But I'm just going to shut up and let you answer the four questions. First one is favorite films.
Favorite films. So I was told I get a maximum of three. So I picked my three. It's a broad spectrum. It's a childhood favorite. It's a film school favorite. And it is a current favorite. So I have a whole spectrum of like my own, all my years of
that's
taking
a nice
in
way
film.
To do it. So those are the three. So you divide it into parts of your life.
Parts of my life.
By the way, I sometimes joke that there is no one in a black and white striped shirt with a whistle to stop you if you name a fourth.
If I name a fourth, okay.
But I respect you keeping it to the
three. Try to, you know.
Because you got to limit it somewhere.
Yeah, I mean.
Otherwise, we'll get to like your top 50.
And then it's not even favorite films. You're just listing films you like.
Yeah, that's true.
So first off, my childhood favorite. 1985, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
So, okay, that is a perfect film. That is one of the best scripts ever.
Yeah, to me, one of the reasons I've always said this, to me, it's my desert island film, right? Like, if it's an ultimate hypothetical, if you had to be stuck on a desert island for the rest of your life and you can only take one movie with you and to watch forever, for the rest of your life, you can watch as many times as you want. You could watch it, you know, ad nauseum, but you're only limited to one film ever for the rest of your life. Hands down, it would be that film for me. We were talking earlier, it's like the film you could watch 1,000 times and it's just as good on watch number 1,000. That's this film for me.
Eminently quotable, co-written by the great
Phil Hartman. Yes.
Paul Rubens and Phil Hartman, a couple of groundlings here in L.A., sat down and wrote a script. I still remember when it came out and Pee-wee did David Letterman and he just said, it's a quest film. And it is a quest.
Yes, yes. What I love about the film is that it's not just, you know, as I grew up, I was, you know, dating myself, but I grew up on Pee-wee's Playhouse as a kid. So it's already, you have this appeal of Pee-wee. You have this just pure, wonderfully innocent story about a boy and his bike. You know, endlessly quotable debut director of Tim Burton. His whole aesthetic is kind of, you know, coming into the landscape. Danny Elfman's amazing score, inspired by Nino Rota, who did a lot of, you know, did Godfather and a lot of Fellini films and all that. This legendary composer. So you have so much amazing artistry kind of coming together. But one of the things I love about it is that it's not just a boy and his bike, but it's this journey to think beyond himself. Because if you recall, the when Dottie asks him to go to the drive-in and he turns her down, right after that is when his bike gets stolen. So it's the universe saying, you know, you were so obsessed with your own interests, and the universe says, now I have to put you on a quest, not just for your bike, but for you to realize it's not just about you, you know? And so in the end, when he gets his bike back and you're at the drive-in and he drives away on, or rides away on his bike with Dottie, and she's like, don't you want to stay for the rest of the movie? He's like, no, I don't need to watch it. I've lived it, because he now knows what it is to affect the lives of all the people he's encountered in his quest. And he is not just leaving with his bike, but he's leaving with Dottie, and they're leaving together, and he's found the value of another human connection. And there's something so pure about that. And like you think, it's the perfect script, and that's what makes it perfect. It's not just the endlessly quotable lines and then the wonderfully aesthetic and Pee-wee's, you know, whole persona.
And the great humor.
It's the soul of it and his realization. It's not about him. It's not about his own interests. It's not just about getting his bike back. You know, it's something larger than that. And to me, like, just the watching beyond that and beyond the humor and everything, it's so rewarding to watch this film endlessly. It's like, I can't get enough of it, you know? I could literally watch it and then rewind it, take the DVD player out and put it back in and watch it all over again. It's never get tired of it.
For sure. And amazing, right? Because Tim Burton had just gone to CalArts and done animation and done that Vincent short and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that they hired him to do that changed the course of cinema, really, because it put him on the map to do Beetlejuice and then all the amazing things he did. And he might have just been a Disney animator if that hadn't happened, right? I mean, that's where most CalArts animators end up. And I will always remember the Large Marge scene. By the way, in the theaters, I think I was a high school senior when Pee-wee's Big Adventure came out. And I actually screamed when Large Marge's face went claymation. And
it was actually
a jump scare for me.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think maybe the first time I ever saw it was kind of like mid-view, and I was right at that moment. I was like, what is this? What am I watching? And so I was hooked, you know, from then on. So
for sure. And it, like you said, it's a special film and it had Tim Burton at the helm. It's mixing art film with pop film.
Right.
It's great.
Right.
It's great. Love your choice. All right.
Thank you.
All right. So that's the childhood.
the pretentious film school favorite, the film that I saw first in film school and really changed the way I viewed filmmaking and storytelling is Federico Fellini's La Strada from 1954. If there's one Fellini film you ever see, it should be La Strada. If you want to get into Fellini's work, the film you need to start with is La Strada. It's maybe his purest work, his most touching story. People always say, you know, his Eight and a Half is his masterpiece, and that's certainly true, and you can watch that and get a lot out of it, but nothing will grip you emotionally and tug at your heart the way that La Strada will. So I've always had a much more rewarding experience watching La Strada compared to Eight and a Half.
Yeah, Eight and a Half is kind of meta, right? Like
very.
Like,
it's very self-reflective.
Like people love it because it's about filmmaking and it's a director playing a director.
Right.
Yeah, I understand why film studies professors make everyone watch Eight and a Half.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I'm gonna have to watch The Strata because I think I might have seen it in school, but but that was over 30 years ago, and I don't remember a frame.
Yeah, and it was the one Fellini film we watched, and my film professor had I'm so glad he had the foresight to have us watch that instead of 8.5, because to me 8.5 is like you need to kind of watch all of his other films or have his whole career up to the point into a certain context, I think, in order to fully take everything in. But Lestrade, you can go in blind and be like, oh, what's this movie about? And then take it all in. So it stars his wife, Giulietta Messina, as Gelsomina, who is this woman child who is kind of sold into the employ of this traveling circus strongman named Zampano, played by Anthony Quinn. And along the way, they meet one of Zampano's circus rivals, Il Matto, or the Fool, played by Richard Basehart. And it's sort of their journey on this kind of vagabond road. It's Italian for the road, La Strada. And it's juxtaposition against Italian neorealism and how it broke away from tradition of neorealism. I found really fascinating. Once I kind of also learned the context in which it was made, because a lot of neorealism films talked about like how post-war Italy is ravaged by, you know, poverty and war and all this stuff. And it kind of tried to make the social commentary of how we can, you know, heal as a society and here society's woes and ills and all that. But here's how we can get to a better place. But La Strada is more universal in its approach, saying here is kind of a more of a universal story. It's not just about post-war Italy, but it's about a road that we are all on and finding our place in the world, finding our place in the universe. And Giulietta Messina, who plays the main character, Gelsomina, her finding her purpose, finding where she belongs in the universe. It's this amazing story. It blew me away. It's a pure and deeply moving story. So yeah, if you're a Fellini fan or if you want to get into Fellini, highly recommend La Strada.
I'm going to go off book for a second, or I'm going to break. I normally don't talk about other people, but the last podcast I recorded before you, Daniel Ammerman, whose film The Poet is in the episode after your episode. He's in episode 4. You're in episode 3 of the same season.
Okay.
He also said, don't watch 8.5. And he said, watch Knights of Cabiria.
Okay.
So are you deep enough in Fellini that means something?
I've seen Knights of Cabiria as well. That's also a really, really great film. Also stars his wife, Giulietta Messina, as Cabiria. Very similar in tone. It's the third film in what is known as his trilogy of loneliness, which is La Strada, followed by Il Bidone, or The Swindle, and then finally after that he did Knights of Cabiria. So those three films, a lot of scholars will look at that as quote-unquote trilogy of loneliness, about, you know, kind of seeking your purpose in a grand and infinite universe and the turmoils of it all. But yes, it's maybe my third favorite Fellini film, so I'll give him Knights of Cabiria.
Fair. Well, now I really have some Fellini homework to do, because obviously I was forced to watch 8.5 in a film studies class in the 80s and probably didn't recover from it.
So yes, watch La Strada, watch Knights of Cabiria. Also my second favorite, watch Ivy Deloni, which is his second solo film. And then maybe watch 8.5 after that.
Or maybe, right, because 8.5 will mean more.
Yeah. Right. Maybe do Dolce Vita as well. He did that after Cabiria. So get that in there if you have 3 hours to spare. And then do 8.5. So,
you know, we should all have time just to watch. Well, we should have a Fellini movie club.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
All right. Well, I think your third is going to be more current.
It is, yeah. It is a Brazilian animated feature called Boy in the World, or... O Menino e o Mundo in Portuguese. I think I pronounced that correctly. By this Brazilian animator named Ale Abreu. Fantastic film, came out in 2013. It is currently my favorite animated film, and by extension, you know, among the top three of my favorite films.
Wow, amazing. And I bet, and this podcast obviously is listened to by a lot of filmmakers. I bet no one's, I mean, Brazilian animation How do you do? Are you just a big animation fan?
Yes,
as an animator,
right.
so you naturally seek out animation.
Sought it out. I initially saw it at a screening at, I think, CineFamily back when that was still around on Fairfax there at the Silent Movie Theater, and then went and saw another screening of it a couple years later. I've seen it twice in theaters. It's currently distributed by G Kids, who's this amazing New York-based distributor of indie and art house animated films globally, it's amazing. It centers on this this young boy who kind of grows up in this rural, like, small town in it's nominally Brazil, but it's not explicitly saying so. And then his dad goes off, leaves the family to find work as a migrant farmer. And he goes on this kind of very kaleidoscopic, colorful odyssey to find his father, and kind of sees this whole current cultural landscape of South America in terms of, talks about, focuses on, like, you know, class struggle and disparities in economic disparities with migrant workers and commercialization in industry, that sort of, the conflicts within those. Kind of like Lestrada, it's kind of geographically specific, but very universal in its kind of human condition struggles. But also, as an animator who makes everything dialogue free, I appreciated this because there is no dialogue in this film as well. So there's like fake gibberish that they say, which is actually Portuguese, like played backwards. So you're not meant to actually, like, understand like what the dialogue is supposed to be, but like 95% of it is completely dialogue free as this boy kind of goes on this kind of odyssey in search of his father.
Which, if you're a person who doesn't appreciate subtitles, because obviously,
yes,
especially with animation where it's all about the visual, right?
Of course,
and you don't have to read it. You can enjoy the film, and you don't have to understand Portuguese.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Which I do not. I'm not fluent in Portuguese or any second language for that matter, sadly. But there are no subtitles. So you're hearing words, but you're not, it's sort of like this white noise, and you see the larger picture in terms of what landscape he's portraying in terms of the, current commercialization and
fantastic. I mean, sounds
economic
great.
Condition of Brazil.
Sounds so great. Yeah. All right. It's on my list.
So. Check it out. And I should say also a lot of great accolades, deservedly so, at the Annies. It won Best Animated Independent Animated Feature. And then was also nominated for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature as well. So,
and lost out to something Pixar or something?
Naturally. What doesn't lose to Pixar? Right?
It's painful. It's painful.
Don't even get me started. That's
I obviously can't. I'm sure everyone's.
I know. As an indie animator, even though I love a lot of what's out there in the mainstream, and a lot of it is deservedly. Deserving of the accolades, but yeah, as an indie animator, it's like, I could talk for another 3 hours about this.
I understand. All right, well, fun. Now, question number two is a film that is underrated.
Boy and the World, or O Menino e o Mundo, I believe it is in Portuguese. So, an underrated film. This goes back to another childhood favorite of mine, and maybe the very first time I ever fell in love with film as a kid is 1990s Dick Tracy, Warren Beatty. I loved this film. I was obsessed with this film when it came out. I was like 6 or 7 when it came out, and I watched it incessantly. But I'm the only person I know who talks about that film or remembers it. Like, no one talks about it anymore. So that's why I think it's very underrated, because no one says anything bad about it. But who's talking about it today?
Nobody.
Nobody.
And that got Pacino his first Oscar, right?
Yeah, I think. He first was nominated actor? For sure. I can't remember if he won, but he was for sure nominated.
Yeah, but it was not taken seriously. But now that I think about it, it probably was fairly pioneering too with the art direction. And
yeah, you've got,
full confession. I did not see it.
Oh, really?
I believe it came out. I think that's another one that came out when I was in high school or something. But I might be exactly 10 years older than you. We didn't share ages.
Right.
But I was close-minded to it because I always saw Warren Beatty as a bit too full of himself.
Yeah, I mean, there are some reviews, maybe pointedly so, that maybe his performance is doesn't really do much justice because the comic strip character is maybe not all that memorable or I mean, it's kind of iconic in terms of like, you know, comic strips of yesteryear, the Chester Gould comics. But as a character, he's just kind of this, I'm a law enforcement and I do good, you know, but like, I don't know. I was so captivated by it as a young child, the colors, the Stephen Sondheim music, you have Madonna performing songs, amazing actors. I mean, you've got Glenn Headley, Al Pacino, Mandy Patinkin, so many amazing performers, and the makeup of the Rogues Gallery, of the, all the gangsters, and Paul Sorvino, left him out, was in that. It was such a great film, I think, to see as a kid, because like the colors, the music, but it was sophisticated enough that presentation-wise, it was just so theatrical and so epic in its scope that I was so captivated by it. And it's such a deeply held childhood favorite to this day, but no one talks about it, you know? So that to me, that's...
I agree. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have heard praise heaped on it before.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet it is probably not acknowledged for... It probably launched several ships, I think. I mean, I'm thinking of like movies like Sin City and stuff probably wouldn't have happened without it.
Yeah, kind of the
it.
Whole like pulp comic... Because you know, yeah. Rocketeer came out around the same time, which was also like pulp comics lifted into yeah. film, even though that also didn't quite... That was kind of also didn't perform as well as they thought in the box office. So there's like right there, there's two failed... Like franchises that could have, they were kind of hoping would turn into something, but in and of themselves, watching them independently, it's, I don't know, it's very, you know, very captivating for me.
Yeah,
for
you that make
film.
Me want to watch it.
Well, there you go.
Well, question number three is a film that is overrated.
Overrated. I only saw this film once as an adult, and I was so excited to see it, and I was a little disappointed in it, and I don't think I ever will feel the need to see it again. Now again, not a bad film, by all means a great film, a classic film, maybe it's very celebrated, deservedly so in terms of how it's celebrated, but for me, it's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Underrated.
Overrated.
I'm sorry, yes. Overrated film. Overrated film.
I feel ya. I can't even in my mind, I know I've seen it from start to finish, mm-hmm. but I basically have mostly seen it in parts.
Yeah.
But, you know... I lose people. Some people just tell me, well, now I can't respect you anymore. Because I right. think in general, it's I think so... Spielberg's overrated. I've heard he's made some good films.
Oh, he made a lot of great films.
But his best film, I joke, I think this is going to be the second podcast in a row where I joke that his best film is Ready Player One.
Really? I haven't seen Ready
probably
Player
not.
One.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's might be his best huh. film. Actually, I think his best film is Munich, to be
not
honest.
Jurassic Park?
You know what? We tried showing Jurassic Park to my daughter when she was like 12 or 13, and she found it really dull. And I'm like, okay. Trust me, it'll get good. It'll get good.
Right.
And really, it took a while to get good. I don't know. She might have biased me against
right,
it.
Right, right.
But
it was also Saving Private Ryan, E.T. You've got a lot of classics.
I've heard
there.
Of them. No, but I Close Encounters.
Yeah, so I saw it and I was so excited. I never saw it as a kid, and it's one of those films that kind of evaded me as a youth. So I watched it maybe 5-6 years ago. Finally, I was so excited to sit down and finally see it. And you know, I could recognize it for its effects, visual effects, groundbreaking achievements, and that you know the appeal of having aliens not be just monsters that want to kill the planet. You know, and having this music notes and having the whole communication thing, you know, bridging these barriers or bridging the gap between these barriers, and a great performance by Richard Dreyfuss. But like, to me, the film just lost me the moment he abandons his family and is like, nope, I'm going to go on the spaceship. And it's like, but how, like, so I was like, that sucks. Like, well, I can't get behind a hero who would do that. Like, am I missing something? So I read all these things. I'm like, why is that film so celebrated? I tuned out.
Because people don't think about that.
I tuned out so instantly the moment that happened. Like, the wife and kids are like, I'm leaving. You've lost your mind. I'm leaving. So I was like, oh, okay. At the end, he'll be inspired to do something and reconcile with his family, or he'll see the greater good in that. But he doesn't. And so I was reading... about it. And I was like, oh, that's the point. You know, he's so enlightened that his family was just an afterthought. It's like, but that shouldn't, no one's family should be an afterthought, right? So to me, I was like, I can't get behind this story now that he's done that. And I even read interviews where I think Spielberg said he made that film before he had children. And now that he, in hindsight, he was like, oh, I would never have done it that way now. You know, so I think even he admits that was maybe a misstep in the journey of that character.
And it was like 81 or 2, right? Was it around then?
77 is when it came out.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was in the era where when men got divorced, they moved on to a new family, right? Like walking away from families was way more accepted in those patriarchal times. And yeah, it rubs me the wrong way. I'm with you 100%. Yeah.
But like I was kind of going into it with the lens of like Jaws and E.T. where like, you know, you kind of have these larger than life moments, but there's still like family at the heart of what's going on, right? Like, but then there wasn't that. So I was like, huh, did I miss something? Like, why am I not into this movie? Because it's so celebrated in terms of, you know, its effects and its, you know, screenplay wise, you know, and screenplay structure. It's always, you know, listed as a great example in screenwriting books. Like, here's when all these beats should happen in this, you know, screenplay format and all that. But yeah, I was like, man, I maybe I'm missing something. But to me, it was like, you know, and I don't know if I feel compelled to see that.
But like you're saying, there's a lot of great things about that film.
Right.
You just think that it's overrated.
It's overrated because of that. Because
people celebrate it a bit much and it's kind of deeply flawed.
Right.
Deeply flawed.
In a way that I don't think his other films are. You know, like that one kind of missed the memo, I think.
Sure enough.
But yeah.
I'm not gonna debate it. You know, I'm going to... F me, I'm going to share another funny thing with you, which is I was once given a screenplay that was a fairly accurate biography of Siddhartha Gautama, Buddha.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing, and it so turned me out. He was an Indian prince who had a wife and children, and he left them to go get enlightened and never returned. Huh. And when I read that, I'm like, how is this the most inspiring story for millions? Abandoning your family to just sit under to focus on your own personal need for enlightenment.
Right.
I had a really hard time with that.
Was that Siddhartha the book by Herman Hesse?
It was a screenplay.
Oh, screenplay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So someone gave me the script.
Yeah.
They might have based it solely on that book.
Gotcha.
I don't know. But when I read that, I was like, holy moly!
Yeah.
Walking away from your kids.
Like, you can't win audience's favor when you do something like that.
Not cool.
Right.
Not cool.
No matter how greater your calling is.
Not mine either.
Right. All right. Exactly.
Now I've offended everyone who loves Spielberg, and I've offended everyone who thinks, you know.
All Buddhists everywhere.
Buddhists aren't supposed to get mad, though. I'm now a white guy in America telling Buddhists what they're allowed to do. So I am now... My last podcast. So anyway.
But yeah, and I'm not saying that's a bad film, but it's just, aspect of it was kind of like, you know, kind of turned me away.
For sure. All right. Last question is a lesser known for people to seek out.
So this one, which I maybe alluded to in the previous podcast where I talked about being an autonomous kind of one-man show as an animator and saying that there are a select few who have single-handedly animated a feature film. And so this is one such film. It's called Away by this Latvian animator by the name of Gints Zilbilatis, and came out in 2019 and widely celebrated as just this epic one-man show. Literally, he did everything from scoring the music to... You know, all the final outputs and rendering. It's CG. It's 3D CG, but kind of cell shaded to look like 2D. But this boy who survives this plane crash, and he's kind of alone on this deserted island, and he kind of explores this island in search of some kind of refuge or survivability. And you kind of get immersed in this mysterious landscape of this island. There's this kind of big shadowy form, this kind of monster or creature kind of pursuing him. And so it kind of goes into this kind of surreal, kind of spiritual place. But again, told completely dialogue-free, just music and animation, and all done by one person. And I randomly saw it was in L.A. I wanted to go see it in theaters, and he and his filmmaking team just happened to be there from Latvia for a Q&A. I had no idea. I was like, oh, I'm going to go see this film. It's playing at this theater in Glendale. So I went and checked it out, and suddenly it's like, and now here's a filmmaker with a Q&A. I was like, oh, my God. So he talked about the film. I got to chat with him afterwards, got a signed poster, filmmaking goodies, and just talking to him. His young guy, he was like 25 when he did this. And to me, that was just, again, proof of like, someone can do this. It's possible, you know? But not only that, it's such a thought-provoking story left, a lot of it open to interpretation it's a multi-layered story, and you can check it out because at the time of this podcast, it is currently, I believe, available on Tubi. The free streaming service. So
with commercials, but completely free,
and it is available to watch. So
and if you people can watch just it now. Search for Away,
yeah, A-W-A-Y,
it'll show up.
Yeah,
wonderful. Mm-hmm. Do you want to spell Gint's name?
G-I-N-T-S, and then Zilbalotis, which I believe is Z-I-L-B-A-L-O. D-I-S, maybe?
All right, well, that should help.
Yeah, that's something along those lines.
And 2019?
2019.
Yeah. That's so cool that you got to see a Q&A without knowing.
Right, because I've gone to so many animated panels and Q&As and retrospectives and screenings. So I kind of know, like, oh, this the filmmakers will be in attendance afterwards. I had no idea. So suddenly he just showed up. I was like, wow, what an unexpected treat. And then to chat with him afterwards, I told him, I'm an animator as well. I'm also autonomous, and just to kind of have that shared moment of like, oh, you're doing what I want to do. You're 10 years younger than me and you've already accomplished this, but you're still doing what I want to do, So, yeah. I know it got picked up for distribution because obviously it's on Tubi, but I don't know if it has any, I don't believe as of yet it has any like home media release. So, do check it out on Tubi right now. I think you'll be glad you did. There's a few other, if I may, a few other...
I was going to ask you to name the Bill Plimpton film that I should...
Oh, yes.
If I watch one of his features,
is there really one tough.
I should pick? Well, is that too hard? I should just dive.
Well, deep dive. You definitely want to check out The Tune, which I think was 92, maybe. The Tune, that's his first feature. And historically, it's the very first animated film in which every frame of that film was drawn by a single person. It was really cool how he did it because it's about the songwriter who goes in search of trying to write the perfect song for his boss, who was this big...
Oh, so it's
like,
T-U-N-E.
T-U-N-E, yes, The Tune. I just sort of specified. Yes, T-U-N-E. And he goes in this kind of surreal odyssey in search of the perfect song, and there's all these other vignettes and people he encounters in this mythical land that kind of explore the joy of creativity and music. And each kind of vignette he encounters was in fact a previous short film that Bill Plimpton did. So what he would do was make a short film, send it to festivals, get distribution, get some sales, finance it, use that money to make another short film, repeat the process. Now he has a string of like 7 or 8 short films, and they're all interspersed through this larger story he makes around this person, the songwriter going in search of the perfect song. So it's kind of like he was making it through short film, but ultimately had this larger goal of making a feature around it. So he's kind of like making it and financing it and distributing it all like at the same time.
That's genius, and I don't just think it's genius that I've urged people to do that. I said, like, why not make 10 short films,
right.
10 9-minute films that form a feature?
Right, and now you've got a feature, and then you can retweak it, make it a framing device, make an anthology, whatever it is, you've got, now you have a feature made. You have 9 shorts, and you have a feature film. it's all repurposable, and especially in an independent landscape where you're, if you're self-funded or self-financed or autonomous, like your one man show, like I am. It's like, you know, use all of these, you know, limitations to your advantage and make something larger than what you're making.
So, excellent. All right. Well, yeah. I derailed you and pushed you onto Plimpton.
Oh, no problem.
So you were gonna name a couple more.
Yeah, because there's a few other films I'd be remiss in not mentioning that were also one man shows, or close to it. So there's also, I'd like to mention Ilulu, which is this Chilean feature that premiered at the Ottawa International Animation Festival last year by this animator Gabriel Verdugo Soto. Also very, very sweet, very touching, also very dialogue-free. This kind of the memories of this artist and his relationship with his mother kind of through journeys of through time as a child through the present years. Very sweet, very touching, very almost very like oil pastel painting-esque in terms of its kind of its visual style. But again, the guy did everything by himself. So again, I saw that. Again, had this kind of kindred kind of inspirational moment. Where it's like, oh, this guy's doing it. You know,
it's so a very cool niche.
So there's that.
And,
yeah.
And as you explained in the previous podcast, when someone is making a film, an animated film, solely by themselves, autonomously, it just makes sense to rule out dialogue.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
How are you going to do something? Unless you're a master of voices.
Right, and you do all the voices yourself. But
yeah.
But yeah. So I'm not sure if that currently has distribution here in the States, but that's one to know.
And do you travel to these animation specific events?
I try to.
Because you said that you saw that one where?
It was in the Ottawa.
Ottawa, Canada.
However, I didn't go there because the last 2 years they did it virtually because of COVID. So I was able to go to the festivals by sitting at home at my computer.
That's pretty cool.
So yes, especially
another COVID bonus.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because a lot of really great stuff comes out of those festivals. Really boundary pushing, innovative art house indie animation comes out of there. And so I'm able to actually see it on my own as opposed to having to go to Canada to see it was very rewarding.
Excellent. All right.
So
I think we did good.
So yeah. So pretty much any film in which you have it's indie animation and it's by one person, I'm going to gravitate to or recommend. So.
If someone's fascinated by the concept, do you have a list on your website? If someone wanted to pursue the autonomous animation feature thread. I mean, it's a fascinating, like, I think I could sell that in my household of saying, we just watch all the Jordan Peeles. So like, let's watch a bunch of animation that was made by one person.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I'll start there,
yeah,
maybe add a post to your add a page to your site of like if you want to pursue this.
That's a great idea because I do have a blog feature that I don't post to nearly enough. I'm bad at blogging. I'm bad at being like I have stuff to say. Let me type at this, but I should definitely make a post about my own experience curating and finding my own taking out my own listings of the autonomous animator.
Excellent. All right. Well, for those
there
who want to check it out, you should go to briangiovanni.com. Not too hard for me to remember your website. You should know how to spell Brian with an I.
With an I,
and
not a Y.
Giovanni is two N's.
Yep.
.com is C-O-M.
C-O-M.
For the those of us who are quite impaired. And Mr. M-R, Brian Giovanni, on Instagram.
Yep.
And that's good to know. You just heard Brian's favorites. Which are great.
Well, thank you.
I really like your favorites.
I appreciate that. Underrated, I like them too because they're my favorites.
Right. And it's just fun to talk about movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because you find the kind of the shared shared enthusiasm for something, and then you can
absolutely
talk all at length.
It's funny. I sometimes will say to people, like, talk me into liking that film.
Right, right.
It's like it didn't work for me, but often it doesn't mean it's a bad film.
Right.
I always tell it. I always say that. It's like, it just wasn't for me, you know?
Right, right.
Like, anyway, I'll shut up and just tell you that you you, the listener, should see Brian's film of Crumbs and Dreams.
Please do.
Go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, and go to season 6. It's in episode 3. You should just buy all of season 6 for $8.
Why not? Just buy it all.
Yeah, spend $7.99 and then give it 5 stars. And in your review, say the short animation, the animated short of Crumbs and Dreams made the whole season. It was the reason
Naturally,
I loved it.
Of course.
And please do. And if you want to learn more about the TV series or this podcast that gave birth to it, there is the website, discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And I don't think we mentioned the festivals yet in this one, this podcast, but of Crumbs and Dreams, I met Brian because he brought that film to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in November 2022. We hold that festival every November. If you want to learn more, it's ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. In fact, I just saw a submission this week that was an amazing animated short.
Oh, nice.
That exploded my brain.
Maybe
I should send it to you.
Please do. I'd love to check it out.
It's harsh and inappropriate, but absurd and okay. Crazy. It's I love
all animation. Good adjectives,
yeah. Right? Animation.
Yes.
So come to Sherman Oaks Film Festival to see some amazing animation and some live films too, live action. I said ShermanOaksFF.com and at ShermanOaksFF for social media. There is a sister festival, Film Invasion Los Angeles, that we hold that one every June, and you can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I have now done my required, I should pretend. It's funny. A podcast guest once said, you should act like they're sponsors. And I'm like, I'm not going to BS anybody. It's just,
Make up some fake companies
I know. Yeah. I could do it, but I'll just be honest. I program film festivals. Our festivals actually have pretty long Q&As, I think, but not long enough for me because, there was a lot more you had
to
say.
Absolutely. It's always good to
about your work and your film, and that's what the podcast
of course.
Is for.
Well, thank you. Especially, I'm creating stuff all alone, animating stuff all alone, and then I put out in the world, it's so nice to have a face to talk to about it. It's so rewarding to have that audience to share it with after you're doing so much of it by yourself. So moments like these and ways to connect about it are very much very much treasured. So.
My pleasure. And I'll say, I believe your short at Sherman Oaks last year, wasn't it your short and then that film from Belgium?
Yes.
And then you were the only Q&A, and then we had all those screenwriters there.
That's right.
We did the screen. So there was actually this wonderful crowd that you got to talk to.
The whole crowd, yes.
And that was nice. And they didn't get to talk to, they didn't get to talk to the other filmmaker because they didn't fly
he wasn't
from
there.
Belgium.
Right.
Yeah. That was a wonderful film. I remember that.
That was a good film. That was very delightfully darkly
Squatch,
hilarious.
Right. Yes. It was, oh my God, I'm forgetting the English, but Squish.
Yes.
Because, that was a cool film. All right, well, thank you, Brian.
So thank you.
Thank you for the kind compliment.
Of course.
My pleasure. Certainly appreciate being appreciated.
That's good.
And I appreciate your appreciation of my appreciation.
It is likewise appreciated, yes.
And I will thank everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And thank you, Brian.
Thanks. Have a good one.